Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Box of the Beat on NLL Radio. It's also available on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I am Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at ilindoor.com, where you can go for the best of lacrosse coverage on the internet. This week, I'm pleased to welcome back friend of the show, Marty O'Neill. Always enjoy getting to talk with Marty. It took us a little while to get it done because he had some schedule issues. I had some schedule issues. I was sick for a day. We had to do it in two parts, but I think you'll really enjoy the conversation. We get into depth in a lot of areas. We talk about the Saskatchewan Rush. Should they be panicking? Are they fine? The Georgia Swarm. How they're growing into a good team once again, and they're going to be good for a while. Tom Schreiber, the Toronto offense, and how hard it's going to be for anyone to stop them, but can they really keep going at 21 goals a game? We also talk about Robert Hope and his rising status among NLL defenders. We talk about the Calgary goaltending situation. We talk about Vancouver and the frustration of playing two of their best games of the year and losing them both in a very tough weekend. We talk about a lot of things around the NLL. I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you do. Thanks, lacrosse friends, for being here. Enjoy the show. Joining me on Box of the Beat this week from IL Indoor, my colleague Marty O'Neill. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, Stephen.
So, lots of things to talk about this week, and one that jumps out to me is, you know, Saskatchewan, for the second week in a row, gives up a big lead and goes to overtime. They lost to Buffalo. They won this week against Calgary. And I'm seeing all kinds of reports from Saskatchewan and elsewhere, people saying, oh, no, you know, there's problems, there's this, there's that. They weren't very sharp, or, you know, they let this league get away. Am I being maybe too calm in thinking it's early, they don't have a whole lot to worry about, they're still 5-1, they're a terrific team, and I don't think they're going to let that happen when it really counts down the stretch and in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think, you know, Saskatchewan came out early on with something to prove. Championship loss didn't sit well with them, and on paper they are, I think, the deepest team in the NHL. So I think it's always going to be this group in Saskatchewan's problem to be motivated, because on any given night they can pulverize pretty much every team in the league if they put their game together. And so, as my old head coach in Boston, Ron Fraser, used to say, you're playing against yourselves, really, at the end of the day. So each one of those guys has a game that they need to play in their mind, and then the coach has a game plan for each one of them. And if they can kind of do both and fit in the team mold, I think that team's unbeatable. But, you know, on any given night, on any team, in any sport, anywhere, different guys show up with different things in their head. They got an agenda, or, you know, they're hurt and they're not telling the trainers or the coaches or, but it can detract from a team's performance. And some nights, just the other team's better, you know, like they have everything going their way and they're creating the bounces, and Saskatchewan can't do that for 60 minutes every night. So I think, you know, how they manage their downtime when they have a 5-minute run where they go for a crap and then they bounce back from it. You know, and they won in overtime, so their skill level can just do that. I mean, Ben McIntosh just beats two guys to the hole and shoots and puts it in the net and it's game over, and you're going, oh, you know, where was that, you know, 20 minutes ago or 30 minutes ago? But it was there. It was always there, and they just did it then. So that's the scary thing about Saskatchewan, just at any minute they can they can turn into that mode and put up five goals in 3 minutes. But, you know, at the same time, they've shown us that they can go for a lunch break here and there and really drop a game just because they didn't show up for 15 minutes in the center of a game.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think, you know, they can have that happen. They've had it, I think, each of the last few years. They've shown they've had stretches where they haven't played exceptionally well, usually early in the season. And I just don't know. I've talked to coaches. I've talked to Derek Keenan specifically about it. I've talked to Chris Corbeil, the captain, about it. And they tend to think it's not the worst thing in the world to lose a game here or there and be a reminder that they do have to show up and they do have to play. They can't just show up. They've got to come out and play.
sure, and adversity makes everybody better. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, maybe not a 1-6 team, but them losing a few games keeps people in check, and it stops them from just going through the motions. But again, I think they're playing against themselves, where they can really manage their own egos coming through the door, and everybody can play a role. They're almost unstoppable, and we sort of lose track. You know, when you think about the Saskatchewan Rush, the Edmonton Rush. I mean, the Edmonton Rush were in the Western Final in 2014, 2013, and maybe, you know, a couple of years before that. I don't even remember that far back. I remember Paul Rabil scoring the goal in Seattle to beat them. I don't know what year that was. That might have been 2010 or 11. I can't recall now. But this team's been good for a long time. It hasn't just been like the last couple of years where they've won the championship, lost the championship kind of thing. They've been around and very close to being the best in the league since 2013. So we're going on 5 years here.
Yeah, I mean, I've written about it and talked about it a fair bit, that the 2012 offseason was really when the pieces were put in place. I mean, the trades for Chris Corbeil and Jeff Cornwall, the expansion or the dispersal draft of the Blazers that year, they got Kyle Rubish and Ryan Dilks, who was a steal in the second round of that draft. The draft picks, I mean, Mark Matthews and then Ben McIntosh and Robert Church, who they got fifth, which was a great pick. You know, it's really been built up, and they've been a very good team for a long time, and you know, they manage the ups and the downs. They don't really let it get to them. And, you know, like you said, they didn't like losing the championship last year, but losing a championship is not the worst thing to happen to a team. I mean, you know, that's a pretty impressive season when you get to the final and lose to a Georgia team that really was on a roll and playing at the very peak of what they could do.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta give Georgia all the credit in the world for beating a team that good and raising their level. And the thing about Georgia was they just, you know, it's cliche that everybody outworks the other team, but it's not that they outworked the Rush. It was just that they outworked every team all season long, at least in the offensive end. I remember early on in the season just being so impressed with Lyle Thompson's forechecking ability, and just that he played way bigger than he was, and he played with a little bit of reckless abandon for a guy who ended up being the MVP of the league. So, you know, he really plays all aspects of the game well, and you just got to appreciate that in the guy. And then to a man, every guy in their team is doing extra in the offensive end, and then their defense found themselves and really started to click. And you know, with the three guys they brought in last year, Sturros and 55, I always forget his name.
Brian Cole,
who I thought was outstanding right from the start. And there was one other guy.
John Rannigan.
Not Rannigan. He was a pickup. It was a
guy. Oh, the draft. Connor Sellers.
Yes. So they, you know, they had that group that just had to, like, kind of get their act all on the same page and figure each other out. It only comes from playing a bit, but all of a sudden, I think after they lost to Calgary about mid-season, they just kicked in, and it was kind of like the Titans back in whatever year that was, 2009, where they were, like, you know, losing heavily, and I think they won 8 straight to close out the season, go in the playoffs and start, you know, they beat us in Minnesota. So it was 2008, and it was just like, wow, when these American guys in New York and this sort of athletic defense Swarm had last year put it together. They really put it together.
Yeah, and you know, you look at Georgia this year, and I mean, they've struggled a bit. They're 3-3, and even in the games they won, I mean, they played Vancouver on Saturday after Vancouver had been playing the night before in Denver and was clearly pretty gassed by the end of that game. But you know, they're putting it back together, and I suspect, I mean, you have to adjust to not having Jordan Hall, who is a huge part of that championship team, and to not having Joel White so far. They're hoping he'll be back. You know, you throw in a couple of defenders. They didn't have Ethan O'Connor at first. He is back now. But, you know, you throw in Zed Williams. I was going to say, Tutton comes back in a couple of weeks. He just – I tweeted something today about, or I mentioned something about, it was nice to see him out on the floor playing around with 2 Chainz in a tweet that the head swarm sent out, and I said, oh, you know, I don't know when he's coming back, but it'll be great to see him. It's nice to see him out there. And he tweeted back and said, hey, I'm back in a planet in a couple of weeks. I mean, that's huge to get Chad Tutton back. And they've put Zed Williams and Frank Brown on defense when they're offensive guys who are gradually getting it. They've had a lot of moving pieces, and, you know, it's coming together, and they're going to be good.
Yeah, and I don't see them panicking or thinking about, you know, that something's wrong there. They've got it under control. And those two young guys you just mentioned, I mean, at the start of the year, again, you could forecast that they're going to have trouble navigating, you know, playing indoor at the highest level when they really don't have a lot of background. I know both of them have had some junior experience in the East and everything. But at the end of the day, they're athletes. And the NHL, what some people don't understand is that it's a speed game.
Yeah.
And if you don't have speed, you know, you can't compete. So a Canadian guy who's, you know, maybe got great stick skills and can shoot the lights out, if his feet don't work, he's going to lose because he's never going to have the ball. So I learned that a long time ago on the old MILL. We played the Bandits with our Jackrabbit team in Boston. But I think that's where, Georgia is dangerous. They're really dangerous because they can attack from all facets. And once they tighten up their defense a little bit more, which, you know, right now I think it's their power play is giving them a problem. But, you know, they've got a bunch of games to work it out here. And I think they're going to be, you know, the top team in the East. I think Toronto's right there too. And maybe a little better offensively right now. But, yeah, that's why they play the game, so we can figure it out.
I think it's fair to say that Toronto's probably the best team in the league offensively right now. I don't think there's much doubt about that. My goodness.
Yeah.
They're
on fire.
Oh, I mean, Tom Schreiber. It's not just the numbers either, right? I mean, I mentioned this in my three stars this week that Tom Schreiber is doing some gorgeous things out on the floor. It's unbelievable that he's played like 27 games of box lacrosse.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, little story that's parallels this, but not to the extreme that Tom Schreiber's doing his thing. But back in my first year as a GM in Philadelphia, we didn't draft Keith Cromwell, but I scouted the heck out of him at Bridgeport playing field lacrosse, and I just loved him, and I thought he would translate to box, and just ended up happening that we were able to flip a first-round pick for him and get him before the season started. And when I called him, he said he just started working for Atlantic Bell or something and he couldn't play that year. And I was like heartbroken. So then I called him about 2 weeks later to send in some paperwork so we could ice him on a holdout. And he said, well, I hated the job, I quit. And so he literally drove up from Long Island. I went in goal and he shot on me for like 2 days, stayed overnight at his aunt's house. And then we played Friday night in Albany to start the season. He was in the lineup. And he was a guy that I thought could have been a great box player, and he was pretty good as it were. But, you know, in the first year, we kind of worked him in transition on the back end a little bit, trying to fit him in. I mean, he was on the left side with Mark Millen and Tommy Marichek and some pretty big names. So Jason Clark we had for a while. And you know, he had to wait his time, but he was in there on the power play pretty early, and he was popping goals in his first year. And they play, Schreiber plays very similar, the way they kind of have these hesitations and the way they run. But I saw Schreiber play last year live, and his foot speed's a little bit better than Keith's. And you really have a new appreciation for him when you watch him live.
Yeah, I mean, it blew me away last year. In fact, right at the beginning of the season last year, you know, it was all the talk of the league with Schreiber and Keith Karen McArdle and Connor Busek, who didn't wind up playing a lot, but the three of them that the Rock were bringing in, the three American field players and trying it out. And the first game that I watched, Karen McArdle had a bunch of points. Tom Schreiber didn't have so many, but I said right after that first game, actually, Tom Schreiber he's the one. Like, that's the guy. And you could see, I didn't, it's interesting because I actually, somebody from Inside Lacrosse, our editor, Matt Kinnear, brought it up later in the season when Schreiber had become the big story. He said, you saw something right at the beginning, right? And I was like, yeah, you just see the way he moves, the way he thinks, the way he handles his stick. You could tell it was going to work. And
That's kind of what I was touching on with Cromwell. It was just right from the beginning, he was kind of stocky, and same thing with Shriver. He's kind of, you know, he's got thick legs, and he just looks like, you know, he can take that beating on offense. Yeah. And you know, these American guys have these skill sets. I mean, it's just a matter of them picking up the nuances, and especially with Shriver's case, he's in Toronto with, you know, Josh Sanderson and all sorts of top-notch people in his ear giving him stuff. And even in this day and age with video and whatnot, that probably, you know, guys in the past didn't have, he can eclipse that learning curve pretty quick. So it's not really that surprising, because, again, it's that skill set, and it comes down to a bit of speed, and he can already shoot very well outside, and it's really just adapting to the physical play and learning a little bit about how to set a pick or be in offensive plays and how to navigate that and differentiate from field lacrosse.
And it's a challenge. I thought I did a story in Inside Lacrosse magazine this year about the big question for each team in the NLL heading into the season in the preview issue for the year. And for Toronto, I said, how does that right side work? Looks great when you've got Schreiber, Hickey, and Hellier. But Hellier's coming back after missing a year to injury. Schreiber's become the guy. Hickey's a 50-goal scorer. How do they all work in and work with the left side with Adam Jones coming in and a bunch of new guys and McArdle getting more regular and Reid Reinholt second year and Dan Craig? How does that all come together? How long will it take? But how, when you've got so many talented guys, but boy, I'll tell you, they are the poster child for unselfishness and working together for the greater good of the team.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, I was really impressed with Reid Reinholt last year.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, when you have an offense that deep, when you're say it's a 6 or 7 man offense on any given night, mm-hmm. when your 6 and 7 guys are left alone because they're checking everybody else so tightly and they're filling the net, then it works. And that's what's happening in Toronto. It kind of happened last year too. So, you know, you'll just see, I think, on any given night that Jones will get 5 or Shriver will get 5 or, you know, somebody's going to go and light up the Christmas tree and have a multiple goal night. And it's their turn because they're trying to shut off somebody else, and then that guy's getting the looks. And as long as they can keep doing that, there's really no stopping them offensively.
You just can't expect, though, that they'll keep getting – you said, you know, Schreiber can go for 5, Jones can go for 5. They both did on Saturday, and Hellier went for 4. I mean, that's incredible. They can't – I mean, before the weekend, in my picks for IL Indoor, I said, I just don't think – I mean, I picked Toronto to win, but I said, I don't think they're going to keep scoring 21 a game. Well, they did. And like you said, can they be stopped? I mean, obviously at some point they're going to have an off night where they're hitting the outside of posts instead of the inside and stuff. But, man, it looks like the scoring record that Georgia set last year is in danger.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, you know, you think about back to the start of the season, they lost a couple of games. They didn't look very good. Yeah. And everybody's, they're not playing well together. And, you know, just like, again, it's hard to play in Rochester, and that's where they lost one. So that kind of happened. And you know, that's the thing about, I always watch that Eastern Corridor group, and Buffalo and Rochester and Toronto have proven to me over the years, and especially in more recent times, they're all pretty streaky. They're all really red hot or ice cold, Buffalo especially. But, I think Toronto's by far a little bit more talented and better on paper and in reality than those two teams at this point.
Yeah. I mean, the thing, even with those two first games where they scored less than 10 goals in each, last year Georgia set the record for goals in a season with 266. Toronto right now is on pace for 300.
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the year of averages and whatever thing you want to look at, goaltending, power play, whatever, we used to always throw out the best game and the worst game and then take your average from there just to take out the misnomers kind of thing. So
yeah, but if you throw out the best game for Toronto, they still have 3 games of like 20-plus goals.
I know, but I mean, you know, are they using them all up already?
You know, never know.
Can we stay that hot at the craps table? I don't know.
We'll see. It'll be interesting. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with more on Box LaVite on NLL Radio. All right, we are back for the second half of Box LaVite. I am Stephen Stamp, joined by Marty O'Neill once again, and we've talked about the Saskatchewan Rush and how it's way too early and ill-advised to panic for them, about the Georgia Swarm and how they're going to get better, Tom Schreiber and the Toronto Rock, and whether they'll just keep scoring, and how things are going in Toronto. I want to move on to a few other things. One, you're kind of the perfect man for, and kind of not, because I want to talk about the Calgary goaltending situation. Full disclosure, you're the goalie coach for the Roughnecks, so you've got good insight, but you can't obviously share everything that you're thinking there. But I am curious, you know, the team has gone in a direction with two young goalies, and it hasn't gone maybe smoothly this year. There's a lot of potential there, a lot of talent, but also some struggles that tend to happen with young goalies. And right now, it's just the two of them. There's no veteran to step in. What are things looking like? How's the room?
I think you know, the team is pretty high after last week's game, even though it was an overtime loss. It's obviously a bit of a moral victory just because they competed at probably the highest level they could against the best team in the league, and spotted them five goals or whatever it was, and then started to play. So at least they made believers out of themselves in that room that they can get it done. And I can attest to anybody who will listen that on paper, that's one of the top three or four teams in the league, and they just have to find a way to have a good night on all facets. So, you know, some nights their offense goes south and their defense and goaltending's there. Some nights, you know, the defense is a bit loose and the offense is putting up numbers, but they lose by one in a shootout. So they just got to dial it in a bit tighter. But, you know, that's, again, why you play the games, and every other team in the league is faced with the same issues week in and week out. So Calgary's got to just be more consistent.
Yeah, I saw one post where someone was saying that the goaltending there is a big problem because Christian Delmianco is far from a starting goalie now, if he'll ever be. And I was thinking, this is one of the most talented kids we've seen come along as a goaltender in a long time. I don't think there's any question that he can be a starting goalie. It's just, there's a risk when you take a young goalie. They took Delbianco when he was an 18-year-old, declared for the draft. But if any team was prepared to deal with that, it was probably Calgary, because they had Frankie Chiliano when he had a few years of junior left as well and knew the ups and downs. I guess the difference is Frankie had a veteran, Mike Poulin, ahead of him, whereas Delbianco, now Frankie's a veteran, but he's still a younger veteran.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't read too much into that. The goalie situation in a lot of teams is really environmental. And what I mean by that is just that the goalies can perform at a decent level on a poor defensive team, or a team that takes a lot of chances transition-wise and opens up and gives up a lot of high-quality shots. And then, as we saw last year, Vancouver taking up their defense about four games into the season, and their numbers went through the roof because they were just dictating that, you know, they weren't trying to stop shots. They were trying to dictate poor angle shots or lesser shots, and Belanger handled it. So when people ask me about goaltending, it's a tough question because I don't look at it like everybody else does. I don't look at it from a number standpoint. I look at it from a team standpoint. And then the other thing that's really been tough in Calgary on Mike Poulin and then Frank and then Christian a little bit too, but not so much. It's just that it seems like they're always in catch-up mode the last few years. You know, they went down 0-6 at the start of the 1 year, and then the next year wasn't great, and then this year hasn't been great. And so the goalies are always under the gun to perform, and they don't get a chance to breathe as much as, you know, like Mike Poulin, for instance, in Georgia. Everyone is pretty high in his game, and I got to admit, he's improved. And the main improvement piece for Mike is confidence. He just doesn't have that Calgary pressure on him night in and night out. Yeah. And, you know, he's able to excel in the third and fourth quarters and come up with those saves because he's just not feeling that pressure that I think he felt in Calgary.
Yeah, I think Poulin's a great example. I mean, he had a fantastic 2012 season. He's very much been a confidence goalie, like so many are. And, I mean, he's the first to admit, like I had him on last year, and he said, look, I've never said I'm the best goalie or one of the best goalies in the league. I go out and try and play with my team, and, you know, some nights I'm great, and some nights I just don't have it. And I think that's the same for just about every goalie in the world. I mean, even, you know, Matt Vince, who's arguably the best goalie we've seen in the league, or you look at go back to a Dallas Elliott or Bob Watson, and there were nights where they just didn't have it. Not many with those guys, but I think that's what everyone's working towards, right, is becoming consistent, which is why one of the reasons why it takes goalies a while, often, till they're 27 or 28, to really hit their peak form.
Yeah, and as an ex-goalie, I can tell you, like, my last season in Buffalo, I barely played, and I ended up playing the playoff game after, you know, a bad first quarter. So anything can happen. You can always be the guy. You know, Zach Higgins started the season in Vancouver's roster, and now he might be the starter in Buffalo. So there's ups and downs for goalies, and they've got to ride those waves and not get too down or not get too high, because it can bite you in the ass one day and the next day you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, and sometimes you're the reason, sometimes really you're not. You know, sometimes they hit you in the chest 40 times in a night, yeah, and you give me first down and really didn't do anything spectacular. Yeah. So I even looked at Bob Watson's 2008 season. Toronto missed the playoffs. They didn't have a great year. And it was one of the times the media was actually paying attention to, you know, not just his numbers, but the way he played and kept Toronto in games when they were, you know, not a great team that year. And he got the Goalie of the Year award, and, you know, they didn't even make the playoffs. So those years happened. Tyler Richards had one of those years for Washington. I think it was 2013, the year that they went 4-12 or whatever it was. And yeah, I was marking a lot of stats that year. And He was over 80, or he was 82% in a loss and 80% in another loss, and he was, his numbers were great, and he was doing everything he could to help that team win games, and he was the main reason why that team won a lot of games and got to a lot of championship games. And so, you know, that just went unnoticed, and a lot of his career's gone unnoticed. I feel bad for the guy. If he played in the East, he'd be mentioned with the Elliotts and Watsons.
Yeah, now he's run into some concussion issues and had a chance with Calgary this year, didn't stick around. But is he still looking to play, or is he? I haven't heard any official retirement announcement.
No, he's on Calgary's roster. I think they just moved him back to the practice roster or something last week. But he came to camp and he understands the role. You know, obviously, Calgary's committed to two younger goalies. They've already gone as far with them, and they weren't going to push any panic buttons. But, lucky for Calgary that nobody else has signed Tyler. And Tyler will play again in the NHL. There's no doubt in my mind. And he's going to rise back to the top. There's no doubt in my mind. I just don't think there's a goalie out there with the skill set or confidence that he has. And he's shown it many times under pressure and just excelled. And that's where I think he beats other guys. And, we'll see. You know, I could be wrong, but the expansion's coming. He'll be in the NHL again. And, look at Zach Higgins. Look at if Christian DelBianco gets to play some minutes here, we'll finally find out if he's any good or not, or at least if he's getting better, because, you know, he is 20 years old. So the life of the goalie is up and down. And you know, Ty Belanger was the best save percentage in the league, and now he's third string in Vancouver.
Yeah. One interesting thing I think about goalies is, teams tend to ride their one starting goalie these days quite heavily. And that's something, I mean, I don't tend to reveal what coaches and players and that say to me in kind of casual conversations around the benches before games and stuff. But this one, I don't think Derek Keenan would mind that he mentioned to me that he thinks he probably should have gotten Aaron Bold a bit of rest last year and gotten Tyler Carlson in some games, just because then there was one game Carlson had to go in and he looked like a rusty goalie. And you see this year, I mean, Evan Kirk has played all but, I think, 9 seconds for Saskatchewan, or all but a minute and a half.
Yeah.
You look at other teams where, Mike Poulin has played all the time. And I look at Colorado, where Steve Fryer's the backup, and he hasn't played a full game's worth of minutes in a season for 5 years. And if something happened to Dylan Ward and he suddenly has to win, is he anywhere near ready to play in a game? So do you get him a game? Now, I look at Colorado. They do have a weekend coming up where they've got back-to-back games. I would personally play Fryer in one of those. I suspect Eric Keenan will get Carlson into a game. But how important is it for a backup goalie to get game reps? Because practice is just not the same, right?
And again, the life of a goalie doesn't start with the coach and the goalie relationship. It could be a relationship with the owner and the GM or the GM and the head coach. It's all about wins and home playoff dates and maybe even a bit of money at the end of the day. So you just don't know the inner workings of each and every team.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, Colorado would be wise to get that guy some minutes in, and every team would be wise to get some minutes in. You just mentioned a guy that I think is a very good goalie. You know, maybe it's passing by because we haven't really seen him in 3 years. But try this on for size. In Minnesota, Evan Kirk was Tyler Carlson's backup.
Yeah.
He beat him out over 2 years for the starting job, and Tyler Carlson rose the occasion, was a very good goalie, very patient goalie. I've never seen a goalie, you know, give up less five-hole goals than Tyler Carlson. And, you know, that's half the battle, not beating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I just don't understand why he doesn't get minutes somewhere. And, you know, Derek Keenan's MO is to ride his camel. So it's worked for him. You can't argue it. But I think Tyler Carlson could be a starting goalie somewhere. And really all he needs is minutes and confidence. And that's what they all need.
Yeah, and it's hard to get that confidence when you don't get into games, and then you go in and you know you've got one chance. That's a lot of pressure. I mean, that's something Zach Higgins, you mentioned earlier, has faced over the years, where he's had some chances, but he's never been in a position where he could have a bad game and know he was going back in. And I think a lot of goalies face that. If they don't become the guy, they get a chance to go in, and they know if they don't play great, that's it. That was their chance. And if they do play great, maybe it was their chance too. You know, they're probably going back to the starter anyway. So it's a challenge.
I've seen two different versions of this in recent history, and that was in Minnesota with Higgins and Carlson. Carlson was the starter at the start of the year, and the team literally were awful in front of Carlson about four games in a row.
Yeah.
And I remember he was in Philadelphia, and he, I don't know if he pulled himself or whatever, but he left the net, and Higgins went in, and I think Higgins was pretty much the guy the rest of the year. And it was not, Carlson wasn't great, but the team was awful. I don't mean bad, I mean awful in front of him. And then also in Calgary, there was a couple seasons ago when Frank Siguliano was playing quite a few games early on, and the team just was okay, and they were really starting to get the defense together, and we had a game in Vancouver, and we had like a 6 or 7 goal lead, and then every call went against us. I mean, goals pulled out of the net, interference calls, penalty calls that were just like outlandish, and it was like they were literally trying to just pull the momentum and get it to Vancouver because they were getting embarrassed at home, and Vancouver ended up winning the game, and the season kind of turned for Frank at that moment because Mike Poulin went in and played quite well, and then they gave him a start the next game, and then the team played really well, and Poulin played well, and then that continued on for the rest of the year, and it wasn't really Frank's fault. He was playing quite well up until maybe a couple of games in the middle there were suspect. The team was very suspect, and other elements came into play, so again, life of a goalie.
Yeah, and again, that's, like you said, that not isn't necessarily on the goalie who's in there. I mean, that wasn't Frankie being really bad. It was, he had a bad stretch, Poulin went in, and the team played better in front of him. And sometimes a change will do that. But as a coach, if your team's playing better with that guy in, of course you're not going to change it.
Well, you know, some coaches might, some coaches won't. You know, you look at Derek Keenan, he's going to go right back there on Boulder over Kirk. So
right.
I think... just not my cup of tea. I mean, we used to ride Nick Patterson in Minnesota, and Kevin Croswell would get in there, and he would do great relief work, and we'd give him the odd start, and he would do great in those starts, and then we'd give him another start, and it never happened. He just couldn't carry it.
Yeah,
he wasn't there yet in our time. He never got his chance to have it anywhere else, but You know, those are the things that we did explore, and I would explore again if I was coaching at any level of lacrosse. Is that you got to engage every guy in your team and your backup goal. You can't just be a guy who sits there and opens a gate for 18 games. You'll lose them.
Yeah. You mentioned Aaron Bold, and I think it's an interesting case study to look at him this year because the last 2 years, he was not good for the Saskatchewan Rush. I think a lot of people look at it and say he was still one of the best goalies in the league, but you look at the numbers, the save percentages, and just the five-hole goals he was giving up, the near-side goals he was giving up. He wasn't very good in front of an excellent – or behind an excellent defense. And it was just, it was time, you know, for Saskatchewan to move on. They got Evan Kirk. Bold has gone to New England, and he's had a couple of terrible games. The team's had a couple of terrible games against Saskatchewan and Toronto. But in some of the others, he's looked like Aaron Bold from 2015 when he was legitimately one of the best goalies in the world.
There was a year where he got ripped off. He should have been the first all-pro goalie. Yeah. I think it was 2015, but he had a great year. Yeah. And he has looked really solid. The 9-8 win against New England, I happened to watch that whole game on a Sunday afternoon.
Right, against Rochester.
And Vince had a rough start, but he was stellar too, and he's got the save percentage lead in the league right now on not the best team. So it was another, he had a great year last year. I thought a lot of people ignored it. And he stood tall on a team that was transitioning a lot of positions and dealing with a lot of injuries. So another story there. But Aaron Bold is I know what it's like to play on really, really good teams. It's kind of like the Ken Dryden syndrome where you don't see a good shot for 20 minutes and you kind of, you don't fall asleep, but it's hard to stay sharp. It's a lot easier to play when you're getting a bit more rubber, and it's certainly easier to look good when you're good at stopping high-quality chances and people notice, like Dallas Elliott, good for a career, Bob Watson. So, I think Bold's in a good situation right now. He can recover what was lost and just by being consistent and being the backbone of that team.
Speaking of goalies who are not facing a lot of high-quality shots, Nick Rose, I think, has been excellent for Toronto in that there are long stretches where the Rock have been dominating over their last five games. And then all of a sudden, their defense will kind of doze off a little bit, and he's facing a breakaway or somebody naked on top of the crease, and he's been making phenomenal stops, and I think he's second in the league right now in save percentage, and he is having probably his best season in the league, which may go a little unnoticed just because Toronto's scoring 21 goals a game over their last five.
Yeah, and again, we get back to that point of, you know, how much pressure is he feeling in the 16-2 lead or 10-4 lead? He could just go play and not be too concerned and not get uptight. So the tighter the games or the tougher the season that goes, the season goes, like last year for Toronto when it turned on them about halfway through the year and they started to lose a few games and then everybody kind of hit the skids and that's where the rubber hits the road, just a little bit of adversity. So, right now he's not facing any, but that's not his fault. He's doing quite well.
Yeah. I want to move on to another topic. I do my three stars every week, and my second star this week is Robert Hope. And defenders don't get a lot of love, but I always try and keep an eye for who's played really well. And I thought he put on a clinic last weekend. He had about 14 loose balls or whatever, four caused turnovers. Actually, everyone should go and read Graham Perro's story that's on IL Indoor, and another one coming up about caused turnovers and how differently they're awarded in different arenas. That's coming up because over the years it's been very interesting. He delves into that next week. But Robert Hope is a legit defender. All those caused turnovers I think were real. And to me, he's right up there in the conversation as one of the best defenders in lacrosse right now.
Yeah, he's been very good for a while and very consistent and just improving. Like I noticed the same story with Cam Holdings last year. I thought, it was his best year ever because I just noticed him every time I watched Colorado play, he was doing more than he'd ever done. And always in safe mode. He wasn't, taking chances. He wasn't turning balls over in transition. He was just playing a perfect game. And Hope's very similar, and they have a good system there that is working for them. And and these guys are making it operate. But you can tell he's the quarterback and the man down, and just an all around great defensive player on any situation, face offs and whatnot. And you know, maybe if he scored a few goals in his future, it wouldn't hurt him. But doesn't really. If you're running that team, you don't really care if he scores goals. He's already doing so much and doing very well at it.
Yeah, and he doesn't. I mean, he is kind of their designated guy. He gets so many loose balls, but he also is a guy to take outlet passes and get the ball over center because they trust him to do the smart thing. But he rarely is looking to score, which is funny because he played attack in college at Pfeiffer and was quite good at it. He has skills. He just he's playing his role. He's doing, and he's kind of gotten out of the habit of going to the net and shooting. But if they needed him to, I'm sure he could. The impressive thing for me is how good his footwork is. And there's a great clip that the Mammoth put out of his defense on Ristach on one play. Just, and to me, the way he keeps his feet moving, and it's I think every coach should have all his defenders watch it because he never gets his feet crossed over. He's sidestepping, he's moving back and forth, and he can stay with Dutch because he doesn't get himself spun. He doesn't get his feet caught up and crossed over. And it reminded me of watching him on a 5-on-3 playing for the Peterborough Lakers a couple of years ago, and against, I think it was against Six Nations, against outstanding offensive players. And the way he moves, he's not necessarily the most graceful looking player sometimes when he moves, but if you really pay attention to the way his feet move and the way he gets into lanes and how quickly he gets from one lane to the next, it's a remarkable thing.
Yeah, and I know what you're saying, there's some bigger ganglier guys. I think of scouting Steve Priolo when he played in St. Catharines and junior, and he's wearing these big black high tops, and so his footwork just stood out, and it was just like, this guy might not be ready for the NHL yet. He's got a ways to go in the footwork department, but you know, he's big and imposing, and you know, it took a while for him to show up, but he's getting it done. So I think these guys can get better. And again, that's like Robert Hope's gotten better every year. Like Cam Holley's got better last year. I have a guy named John Sullivan in Minnesota, and everybody was ranting and raving about Ryan Cousins, who was very good. Don't get me wrong, but John Sullivan came through the back door and got better every year, slowly. And he had a longer career than pretty much any guy in that team in my era. So I've seen these guys before, and you know, it's one position where you can just kind of hang around and get better and have a long career. And look at all the guys like Ian Ward still playing.
Yeah,
and everybody thought he was no good 5 years ago, and he's still playing and he's quite effective. So
yeah, I think I might follow that category that 5 years ago I thought he was kind of a marginal roster player. And over the last few years, I think he's improved substantially. I don't know if there's anybody that blocks more shots than Ian Lord. And if you really pay attention, I mean, I've gotten to see him a lot, again, over the summers because he's been in Peterborough, and that gives me a chance. And it always helps when you get to see someone more. But you watch him in Rochester, and he is such a smart player. And I think the one thing also for Ian Lord and for a lot of guys is he had some injuries for 2 or 3 years that kind of limited him, just little nagging things, nothing, you know, not a blown knee, but little, like a lot of guys have, but little nagging injuries. And when he got healthy, all of a sudden you see the speed that he's got and how when he's able physically to execute things, then you realize how quick his mind is.
Yeah, you're right. It makes a big difference when you can draw on all your facilities, and he's obviously doing that. I mean, I have an impression in my mind when you see Lord, I think I'm walking down the tunnel in Buffalo and I see him on the bike after a warm-up because he's not dressing because he's hurt, you know, so you're right. He was banged up for a long time.
Man. One other thing I want to touch on, it's an interesting weekend, last weekend for the Vancouver Stealth. They played probably two of their best games of the year and lose them both, you know, the overtime game in Colorado where things really were clicking for them. Corey Small is up among the top five in the league in scoring now. A lot of things are starting to happen better for them, but they play that game, lose to Colorado the next night. They play quite well against Georgia, but I think fairly obviously ran out of gas in the third and fourth quarter especially, and lost by a few goals. All of a sudden, they're 1-6. They're still half game behind you in Calgary for a playoff spot. But that's a team that, you know, made some improvements last year and is starting to look like they're getting over that early slump. But that's got to be frustrating when you play that well and lose two games.
Yeah, you know, it's tough to put your finger on what is or isn't working in Vancouver this year versus other years, other than the obvious. It appears at least Dutch's injury may be behind him, but I think he's still working through something there, and he's not 100%. It's kind of like when you watch Cody Jameson, you can tell he's just not quite himself yet. So yeah. I think that's hurting Vancouver because he opens up a lot of space when people got to double on him, or he's a threat to go underneath to the net, and his shot's on from outside, then everybody is on their toes and opens up other people. But playing, you know, when they traded Digby, I thought it was a really bad trade because he really does a lot for other people if you use him right. And again, they let Thurston go in a trade, and I don't care what they got back. He's the kind of guy that makes your offense flow, and you know, maybe there's circumstances I've heard that Thurston needed to go back home or go east, so you know, you can understand that. But this is the NHL, and they do fly guys in, so I would say, you know, like, no, maybe in 2 years we'll let you do that, but we need you. So I think it's hurt their offense. He did a lot of the dirty work, and they, you know, they keep letting go of the dirty work guys, and it's not good for their star players. So that said, you know, they completely disbanded the defensive system that they took on in halfway through last year. I don't know if it was because of the coaching change or whatnot, but they're pressing and just doing a lot of opening up, and it really is not working for them. And so I think they've been tightening up a little bit more last weekend.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, guys getting healthy. I mean, Justin Schultz looking a little banged up, but you've had, again, guys who have been out of the lineup, so other guys are in. You know, you just go through the list of, you know, John Harnett, Thomas Hogarth, Salt. There have been a bunch of guys hurt, and that really, it makes it a challenge. You know, chemistry is so important on defense. I would love for them, from their perspective, to get Tyler Garrison back. I know he's in an MBA program at UBC in a really prestigious school, and he just can't be available for games and practices. He just, the way his program is, but I think they're hoping that he'll be back at some point. To me, he's a guy who can be a difference maker for that team. I thought he was a rising star, and any time you can add some leadership and grit like that, that's going to help as well. But it's certainly interesting to watch those two teams battling for that third playoff spot right now.
Sure. Well, you know, Vancouver has partially developed a lot of younger defenders and then just kind of let them go. And I never understood it because they're recycling guys like John Harnett. He's a good defender, but they'd already put a year into, say, 2 years into Ryan Wagner, or a year into Conrad Chapman, or, you know, a year into this guy or that guy. And they're all pretty good players, you know, Bradley Cree, and then they get away, and then you know, I mean, everybody I just mentioned, I think, is a decent NHL player, has the potential to be, so, and, you know, Tyson Rowe gets in the lineup in Vancouver and gets a chance when he didn't in Calgary, and now he's making something of it, and, you know, that's what I would have been doing in Vancouver all along, is just taking your lumps, maybe right off of you and play the crap out of some of these guys, and then set yourself up for the next year. But it seems like the interchange guys, they give up on them too early, or don't like them for some reason, or what have you. But you know, obviously, they've been felled by a couple of injuries here and there. But every team is, and you know, now Brandon Clellan's getting a chance to play, and some other guys have been kicking around. So at least he's, you know, they're figuring out if he's going to be able to get the mustard or not. But I don't know, just too many moving parts in Vancouver. It's very hard on that defense to feel secure. And, you know, once they get a little more consistent with their lineup, maybe it'll equate to a couple of wins.
Yeah,
it'll be a goal or two difference, and that'll come over the hump, you know.
Exactly. And I think that is such an ongoing question for teams throughout the league, throughout the NLL. A bit of a chicken and egg thing, where you want to be consistent. You want to be Saskatchewan, where you're not turning over a lot of guys, where you're just tweaking, adding a player or two here or there to stay youthful and athletic, and keeping the core of the roster together. Georgia now, it was funny, something popped up, a memory on my Facebook timeline from a article I'd posted about a couple of years ago, a picture of the Georgia offense. And I'm looking at it and I'm saying, those are all the same guys. That's a core offense that stayed together, and that's part of why it's getting there. And you want to have that, but at the same time, until you find those pieces, you have to keep changing guys until you get the ones that you want. So it's, you want to have a consistent effort, but how much do you need to just bear with it and get through the tough stretch and get those guys to become a unit? And how much do you need to tweak some of it? You look at New England. I don't know if they felt the group they had was going to get where they needed to go. So they changed half their defenses here. They already look better. I'm sure they want to keep a bunch of those core guys together now, but boy, it's a fine balance to find the right mix.
It is, but really, you know, look at what Glenn Clark did there. He just committed to doing something, and he did it. And yeah, he's sticking to it, and it's going to pay him back. You know, it already has in a lot of ways, because some of those guys are high draft picks with you know, quality footwork. And he said it himself, you know, last year they lost in transition, and they did. They made bad decisions to turn the ball over, and then they you know, put themselves under pressure a lot. And even Calgary last year, you know, they just weren't converting in transition. And so they're looking for answers there, and that's a big piece of the NFL game now. You can't just play defense. You got to be a little bit more athletic and get up the floor and make good decisions. So I think that's why New England's turned the corner so fast, and Toronto did it last year a little bit too. So every team needs that piece, and every team's got to manage that piece. And again, you know, you go back to Vancouver, and it's like guys switching out here and there all the time. It's hard to have a good defense that can transition the ball and help your team win a game.
I want to touch on one more point before we wrap up. And I've been following the rookies in the league pretty closely this year. And you're obviously in a bit of a biased position being with Calgary, but I think it's an interesting battle right now between Zach Currier and Josh Byrne, with some other guys, you know, a little bit behind, like Colton Watkinson in New England and Dan Craig in Toronto, Jake Withers in Rochester. But to me, it's Zach Currier and then a bit of a gap, and then Josh Byrne and then a substantial gap. And I know there are people who are looking at me. Scott Loeffler from the Bandits didn't like that I tweeted that I thought Zach Currier was leading that race by a fair bit. And Josh Byrne's been great. My response, because he said, oh, if only Josh Byrne was from the borough, saying, you know, because Zach Currier's from Peterborough. And I tweeted back, that doesn't make a difference. If a guy's from Peterborough, I see a lot of him. And sometimes that helps, and sometimes it doesn't help him, because sometimes I see stuff that other people don't see, and I'm like, no, he's not actually that good. I think Currier's been a dynamic difference maker. I think Josh Byrne has been very good in a two-way game. But to me, Currier has really fulfilled the promise that he brought in spades.
I'm a Currier fan. He's got a lot of skill between the lines, and he's got speed to Byrne. And again, he's one of those guys, you know, I'll go back to Tyson Bell when he first came to camp. It was just like, wow, this guy's got like fifth gear in all facets of the game. It's just that he's got to make better decisions. And right, it came pretty fast for him, and he got confident. It's just, it's fun to watch him play. He's my favorite player in the NFL to watch. He is. He's just so exciting. You never know what he's going to do with the ball, but he's always pushing the pace.
And, Tyson or Zach? Career,
is out of that mold.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's got to finish a little bit better, but can be creating chances for himself, and the team could really use those goals. But that would be my only criticism of him right now. I mean, but, you know, I'm going to disagree with you. I think Josh Byrne's a special player. Yeah. He was drafted to be a special player. He gets lots of opportunities to shoot the ball because he plays offense in the lefty shooter position and number one slot on an NFL team. So his role is laid out. And so is Jake Withers. And you know what? I think Rochester should get a lot of credit. Like, Graham Hossack was probably the rookie of the year out of that group.
Yeah.
Because he just getting better all the time, but his skills are a whole level higher than most defenders, and we're seeing it this year now. He's just manhandling people and doing those kind of things.
My goodness, yeah.
So from his draft class, I think in 10 years' time, there'll be no doubt he is the best guy. And I think I don't know if we'll be saying that about Jake Withers, but right now he is filling the need for Rochester and making that team better than they were last year by a lot from a rookie, because he's controlling the faceoff circle, and he's pretty good when he gets out of there playing defense or just clearing the ball and vacuuming up the ball. So he's been really impressive to me as far as, like, you know, the guy who's really doing the most for his team right now to make the playoffs, I think is Zach Gibb.
So you think Jake Withers is the rookie of the year so far? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he's making the most impact of any rookie right now. So, you know, he's not going to win an award for that. But but he's you know, if Rochester makes the playoffs and makes some kind of noise in the playoffs, he'll be a big piece of it. So, you know, as far as goals and assists and points and highlight real plays and all that kind of stuff, Josh Byrne's got to be your guy, but Currier's right there too. But I think, you know, Currier's job is to stop the ball from going to the net first, so it's going to be hard for him going to Rookie of the Year award when a guy like Byrne's going to, you know, be in the forefront.
So if you had a vote right now, we'll cut through all that because I agree with everything you're saying, but if you had to vote, who would you
vote? I'd take Jake Withers because I think he's doing the most for his team in 2018.
Okay. I don't mind that vote. I'm also a big Josh Byrne fan. The thing for me about Josh Byrne is, like you said, he was drafted to be a big scorer, have a big role, and I think he's doing that to an extent. He's scoring very well, leading all rookies. To me, what I've been really impressed with is how well he is playing a two-way game. He's back-checking, he's forechecking, he's an effort guy. I think he's worked really, really hard, and you don't necessarily always see the grinder side of a star forward rookie right away, and I think his work ethic is what makes him, you know, I wouldn't be upset if he won the award, which I think he probably will because the offensive guys do, but I think he's an amazing player as well. He is quite special.
Yeah, no, I've seen a lot of Currier and haven't seen enough of Byrne this year, but I've seen him in junior A and around, and I saw him play in a WLA game last year, a playoff game where he literally broke a guy's ankle going to the net. It was gross. So he's got a special skill set, and he's made for the NLL. He should just take summer ball off and just play NLL and prolong his career, because with feet like that, he can get himself open and he can create space for other people, and he can do all the things he needs to do to make an offense successful. So, the world's his oyster. He just has to figure things out. It's, you know, it might take a year, but again, you know, in 10 years' time, who'll be the guy we're talking about? It'll probably be Josh Byrne.
Yeah. You just had all the Buffalo Bandits fans nodding their heads and all the Burnaby Lakers fans shaking their heads saying, no, we want him to come and play summer ball too.
Yeah, well, he was MIA most of last summer. He did a few guest spots, but he was pretty good in those guest spots. And, you know, if he needs to work on his game, he'll definitely be in Burnaby this summer.
Always fun to talk with you, Marty. Appreciate you taking the time. And it took us a while to get it done because we had some schedule issues, and then I was sick for a day where I basically couldn't do anything except lay in bed. So I really appreciate you being flexible enough to get this thing done. And I think some great insights as always.
Thanks, Steven. Always happy to help you out.
That'll wrap things up for this episode of Box the Beat on NLL Radio. And as I like to mention, also available on iTunes through Inside the Cross Podcasts. My thanks to Marty O'Neill. Always fascinating conversations. I always learn something when I talk to Marty. We don't always agree on things, but it's always interesting. And thanks to you lacrosse friends for being here once again for Box the Beat, the best of lacrosse on the internet. And we'll see you next time.